This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
So, Wally Green, second time on the podcast. The last time was like 2017. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was very, very long.
So, you're a world-level ping pong player, one of the best in the U.S. You've played in North Korea. You've had the most outrageous story to get where you are. And right now, we're in Israel together because my daughter is playing in something called the Maccabiah Games. You've been her coach. Before that, you gave lessons to me. You're a co-founder of Spin, which has, it's like a ping pong slash nightclub that's all across the U.S. And everywhere we go, I see people talking to you. Why is everybody talking to you here? Like, literally, we go downstairs to the hotel lobby, people come up to you and ask for your autograph, and they don't have no idea who you are. On the one hand, I think, and this is no slight against Israel, of course, but I do think you might be the only black person in all of the country, or the few that I've seen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, during the opening ceremony, I actually made a funny video which said, I'm the only black guy in the whole... Where were we at? It was the...
We were at a Jerusalem Stadium.
The stadium. I was the only black guy in the whole stadium.
You and President Biden and me, we were all there.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think maybe I look interesting. Maybe it's my hair. Some people do recognize me either from table tennis or from TikTok or just like...
Yeah, you have a huge TikTok audience and you have some great advice about how to build a TikTok thing. You've also given me great advice about just competition and how to... be in your A game, whether it's, you know, business or sports or whatever, giving me some advice on that. Of course, you've had an incredible background from childhood on. I still don't think I know the whole story. I think you told me some things, but not all the things. In the like 5 years ago, we did a podcast. I don't think you told me everything then for some reason.
I told you most of the stuff.
Like, I don't think you've told me about the Germany and the Africa stuff.
Yeah, the Africa stuff we didn't talk about.
So let's talk background, and then I need advice from you. I've known you for a long time. I need advice. I've been trying to find someone to ask this advice to, so I'm going to ask you advice towards the end. And I want to build up my TikTok audience, so anyone listening wants to build TikToks, you've done a great job. But, like, where are you from, first off?
Originally born in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York?
Yeah.
Like... In the nice upper class area, or
no, definitely not. So far from that, I grew up in the projects, in Marble Projects of the Brooklyn. So definitely was not a nice area. I mean, it's nicer now, but it was definitely not a nice area.
All right, this is a dumb question, but what is a project? And like, I know a project is for lower income people to have subsidized housing, and I guess it started in the 60s. And they built all these buildings. They're the ugliest buildings in New York City. And they're up all over the place, particularly in Brooklyn or in the Lower East Side and a couple places like in East Harlem. But what is it? How did your parents get there?
Oh, man. I don't even know. It's definitely a place where lower income people live. Rent is usually very cheap. So, like, maybe you have a two-bedroom apartment. It'll cost you, like, $200. And the government pays the other half. If there is something.
Who do they pay, though? Is it like...
I'm not sure.
Who's the landlord?
But I think... I actually don't even know where or how they pay it. But I'm sure rent is not $200 for a two-bedroom.
Yeah.
Somebody has to pay.
So in New York City, like the average... I think this is average for New York City. The average rent for a two-bedroom apartment is like $8,000. It's something ridiculous.
It's expensive, yeah. And so the problem with the projects is that everyone is in the same boat. So it's not like you have someone who's making good living and then you have someone who's poor. No, everyone there is pretty much on the same level. So that's where a lot of the tensions come from and that's where a lot of the crime comes from. And that's why, the projects when I grew up was very dangerous because everyone is pretty much on the same level. Everyone doesn't have and everyone wants and everyone tries to find a way to get what they want by any means necessary.
And so, I mean, when you were growing up, did you experience crime and violence there?
All the time. I mean, growing up as a kid, I grew up with very heavy domestic violence. Like, my mom used to get beat up by my stepfather all the time. And
where was your biological father?
Oh, at that time, I knew him. And the only reason I knew my biological father was because when my stepfather didn't want me there anymore, my mom would like throw me away to my father. And then when my mom decided she wanted me, she would just randomly show up at school and just steal me away. So I knew my father because of that. But I don't have a recollection or any memory of my mom and my dad together ever. There's nothing in my memory. So
were they ever married or?
I'm sure they were married. Actually, that's a funny question.
How come you don't know the answer?
No. Actually, that's a crazy question. You know why? Because my dad has children that are older than me.
Uh-huh.
Right? And they're children that are younger than me. And later on, I was like, how do I have stepbrothers and stepsisters that's older than me if I'm the only child from my mom and my dad? And they're from the woman that he's married to before he passed. So it kind of doesn't make sense. It's weird. So I don't know. But, you know, later on in life, I started to think about it. Well, maybe he was married. And then, I don't know, somehow married my mom, had me, and then went back to the person that he was married to.
But did you ever ask your mom or your dad, hey, how did you guys meet?
No, never. I never, ever spoke about it.
Were you ever curious?
I was always curious. But I wasn't allowed to talk about my dad when I was living with my mom.
Yeah.
Like my stepfather was an abusive narcissist. So I never could speak about my dad.
How'd your mom meet your stepdad?
They must have met, maybe. I don't know. I think I was probably one or two. And that's why I can't remember. But my stepdad came from Barbados. He's from the islands. And he was actually illiterate, right? So he couldn't read or write, but he had a skill. And he was a master carpenter. Like, he could build anything, like really, like the highest level of carpentry you could have. That's how he was able to do well in life. But he couldn't read at all. Like, he was very illiterate. So like whenever he liked to buy electronics, like stereo equipment, you know, nice cars, like that was his thing, you know. And this is after we moved from the project, right? But he liked to buy things that you need to read to put together. So I was the one who used to read all the instructions. Mm. So I was. And I think that's why I hate reading instructions. Now, I just came up with an epiphany. That's got to be the reason. Like, I hate reading instructions. So if I buy something, I don't want to read it. I just want to work on it. But when I was younger, I used to have to read all the instructions. And as a kid, reading instructions to put together audio interfaces, it was crazy.
Yeah, that's boring.
But like I said, he got by because he was a master carpenter.
And what did your mom do?
My mom used to work for the government, actually. She worked for the health department. When, you remember, they used to have offices at Penn Station. So my mom used to work for the health department, and she worked that job like pretty much all her life until she got upset and just quit, which is kind of crazy because I think she had, just maybe a year left.
And you had a pension?
To retire. Yeah, and she quit.
So you mentioned you guys moved out of the projects. Is because your dad was doing...
Stepfather.
Or your stepfather was doing well?
Yeah, he was doing well. And then they eventually bought a house in Coney Island.
Okay.
Near Seagate. You know,
Were you still living with them then?
Yeah. At that time, I was living with them even more.
And what you mentioned, domestic violence, that's sort of like this catch-all umbrella phrase. What was happening specifically?
Like, my stepfather used to beat up my mom. Like, punch her in the face, choke her. Like, they would argue and it would get physical, like physically violent.
And now, of course, there's never any reason for that. Was there anything that triggered him, or was there like...
He had the belief that he was the man of the house and the man was the king. You know, all that king of the castle type nonsense. So that was his belief. So if he told my mom to do something, my mom was very actually opposite of that. So whenever he told my mom to do something, she wouldn't do it. Then you get angry. Then you start fighting. And my mom, when she gets angry, she lets you know. And then like I said, he was illiterate. So my mom used to use these words. It was, oh man. I just remember one of the words. I still don't even know what it means. I remember my mom used to get angry and they used to fight. And she was like, you dilapidated son of a bitch. What? Like, she would use these words that he couldn't understand. And it would make him even feel smaller as a man because my mom was very smart. She went to college, you know, and she had a degree, and he didn't have any of that. So when she would throw these words out in an argument, he would get really, really angry. And then he would try to hit her or choke her and stuff like that.
I mean, how old were you when this stuff was going on?
I was a kid. It's been going on since I was a kid, like probably since I was two. Like it's something that was always going on.
What would you do while they were fighting?
So I used to get really angry and really upset. And I always were trying to think of ways that I could kill him at a young age. It was always in my mind. Like, I remember one time I was opening the cabinet. I climbed up on the kind of like a step stool. And he had these pills that he takes. I didn't even know what they're for. But we used to have roaches. Well, we were back in the projects. And, you know, you get roaches in the projects. And then you use like a boric acid. It's like a powder that you pour on the edges of the walls that the roaches step in it. And the boric acid eats their legs and they eventually die. And I was thinking of ways of how I could replace the stuff that was inside the capsules with the boric acid. And it's crazy because I was a kid with already mindsets of thinking this. Even the old sock and the muffler thing that you see on TV, I thought a million times. Like, and this is after we moved, because we didn't have a car. It was a project after we moved of, would that sock thing really work? Like, could you really take socks and put, because he loved to sit in his car for hours. Like, could you really take socks and put it in a muffler and somehow lock the doors and the person would die? So these are all kinds
of things. Can you do that? Does that work?
I don't know. You see it on you see it in movies, but I don't know if it really works in real life.
And so, again, like, would you ever get close to kind of getting in the middle, or did you just try any of these things? Or?
So there was a time, we didn't talk about this before, but there was a time where when I was 14, I got sent away to Africa for 2 years. So
what triggered that?
I got caught with a gun in school. And so because I got caught with a gun in school and I had some other prior problems, I was arrested and they were talking about 10 years. But this...
Okay, wait. Why did you have a gun? Like, whenever I get caught with a gun in school, it was just because I was... It's like a hobby, but why... Why did you get caught with a gun in school? Why did you have a gun there?
At 13, I already had 6 guns. So I was in a gang because I had 2 outlets when I was growing up with abuse. Because it wasn't only my mom being abused. It was also me, right? I used to get hit for no reason. I used to get punished for no reason. My stepfather would tell me every single day, you're going to be dead. You're going to be in jail. You're never going to do anything with your life. And this was every day. This was like constant. Anytime if I would do something good, it would be shut down. So I had 2 outlets. The first outlet, you know, I was in a gang at an early age. So
And like, was it like, what does a gang do? Like, what did a gang recruit you, or they sell drugs, or like, what were they? Well, just fight other people, and they're like all young kids. And
well, it became like a family. So like in the projects, they can be one gang from that one particular project. So they could be many gangs within the project. In my projects, there was like 3 or 4 different gangs, right? So you technically had to join one, because if you didn't join one, you get beat up from all of them. Mm-hmm. So at least if you join one, that's your protection and it's your family. And you know, they did everything from selling drugs to all kinds of stuff. But each person level of what they did was different. Like I never got into the drug side of that. Like I was never into selling drugs or any of that. So I did a lot of other stuff, but none of it was selling drugs.
Like what? Because you're like 12 years old at this time.
Or like fighting, a lot of fighting.
Like gang versus gang?
Yeah, a lot of gang versus gang fighting. Or maybe one of your gang members had beef with someone else, then we go jump that person. Or maybe one of your gang members had a fight, then we go jump that person, you know, or stuff like that.
But and like to join a gang, is it like joining... Again, I apologize for all the stupid questions, but I'm being as naive as possible. Is there like a hazing that happens, or like what happens to join a gang?
Yeah, I won't say exactly what you had to do, but there is something that we had to do in order to join the gang. And it was kind of inflicting serious harm to pretty much any individual. And that was how you got in, because you had to show that you were able to do whatever was necessary for your gang members. And if you couldn't do it to someone random, or you couldn't do it, you wouldn't be able to be part of the gang. And not only that, you'd probably get beat up. So that's where people get caught. People get caught out there when they want to join the gang, right? So you figure, oh, I want to join this gang. The gang's okay, then you have to do this, right? but maybe it's something you really can't do. But the problem is, if you don't do it, you're going to get, it's not like you say, oh, okay, thank you for your application, and then you go home. No, no, you're going to get beat up badly.
And what does that mean? Like, do they all start punching you? Like,
yes,
could they kill you?
Possibly. Like, you would get severely beat up.
Like an arm broken, a rib broken?
Yes. Maybe even die. Like, it depends. Like, and so it puts you in a position to where you may have wanted to join this gang, but at the same time, you're like, wait a minute, I don't want to do that.
Were you afraid when they told you what you had to do?
Of course, 100%. 100%. But the thing is, now, what do you do? Do you not do it and potentially, you know, get killed? Or do you just do it and live with it? So that's how people get caught into it. A lot of times, you know, once you hear what you got to do or the things that... So a lot of times, you know, you hear the word gang, people think as a young kid, oh, I want to be in a gang because they're going to protect me and this and that. But then when you actually hear what it really entails, then your mind says, no, I don't want to do this. But now you already made the commitment to doing what they ask you to do. And now you don't do it, then that's even worse. So now you have to do it. So now you just kind of like put yourself in the corner and yeah.
Why did you need to have 6 guns?
Oh, because I actually held the guns for other people in the gang. Mm. So other
people, this way, because if you were caught, you were probably the youngest. Or
I was the youngest. So I was, at the time, you don't realize it, but I was the one who was probably going to take the rap for other people's stuff. Right. So I had to, at the time, you don't realize. At the time, it's cool. You know, for a kid, you know, you got 6 guns in your house, you feel powerful. You're like, yeah, you know, nobody can mess with me. Now I'm holding the guns, you know. But in the reality of it is, they probably were looking for me to take the fall if something ever went really bad.
Because probably you wouldn't get punished as
much. Not as much, yeah.
And did you even know how to use a gun?
No. You never learn. Like, it's funny because there's no shooting range for gangsters.
Yeah.
It's not like you go to the shooting range and you start shooting.
And you can't practice. It makes noise.
No, no, no. Oh, sometimes you can, because if you go to the bay, you know, like between Marlboro and Coney Island, there's a lot of bays. If you go to the bay, like right to the bay, you actually can't shoot. Huh. I mean, no, people here may hear it or not, but if you're like way, you know, down in the bay, you know, before police come, you know, no. So we've done that before. You know, we go to the bay. And we shoot like sometimes, and these guns are small, you know, like 22 calibers, and they're not really big. It's not like the crazy kids of today walking around with AR-15s. Nobody had an AR-15. Where would you get that from?
Like, if you're 50 feet away from someone with a 22 caliber gun and you aim,
you're gonna miss.
You're
99.9% you miss. The shootings that we hear about, especially with the gang shootings, are usually close up. And even then, people miss. Look at 50 Cent, how many times he got shot. It's some crazy number. Not one bullet killed him, because not one bullet hit him in the head.
Yeah.
Now, were they trying to kill him? Of course they were trying to kill him. Were they trying to shoot him in the head? Of course they were trying to shoot him in the head. But 90% of the time, with the people who are shooting guns, they have no skill. So they're just shooting. But remember, the gun has kickback. So all these bullets are going everywhere, right? And that's why you hear these crazy stories. Yeah, I've been shot 5 times. I didn't die.
So like, if you were walking down the street and you saw, let's just say 10 feet away from you, someone with a gun, you know, who was thought was looking to shoot you.
Yeah.
What would you do right then?
Zigzag run. So it's just like automatic. Automatic.
Yeah.
You run like this. 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get hit. Unless you have bad luck, then you'll get hit. But 9 times out of 10, they will miss you.
And what if you're being mugged? So they're like kind of right in front of you and they're holding the gun out, but you could tell they're a little nervous or whatever, as someone would be. Like, what would you do?
It depends. Like, it's happened to me already before. It's happened where I was...
Because they tell people just comply and give your wallet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, in most cases, yes. But it depends on the situation. And that's where like growing up in the projects comes into place. You know, that kind of smarts, you can't learn this in school. So you have to research. Like, I had a situation where I was with a friend of mine, a close friend of mine, and we were walking. About 5 kids walked past us. And they all looked at us and we looked back at them. Then they walked about maybe 400 feet and they started coming back towards us. And I told my friend, I said, yo, I think something's about to go down. And we didn't have nothing on us at the time. We were just going somewhere. And it came back up to us, and my friend and I was standing there. We just stopped. We stand there, right? Because the worst thing to do is run, because they're going to chase you. Mm. So you got to hold your ground. So we stopped. The kids came up to us, and the kids were like, oh, why are you grilling us? Meaning, why are you looking at us? And then I said, how would you know we're looking at you if you're not looking at us? And it got to some really dumb just argument about looking at each other. It's the stupidest thing ever. But, you know, when you're younger, it's like a serious thing. It got a little heated, and the kid pulled a gun and put it to my face, right? So there's two things you can do. You can either, yo, my bad, which might get you shot anyway, right? Because once you start to, like, back down, then that could get you shot, actually, right? People think if you just back down, you don't get shot. No, because now the person with the gun feels powerful, and now you're a bitch. They might shoot you anyway. So the way I handled it was by staying firm, but not making him try to shoot. So what I said to him, I was like, what you gonna do with that? You know, so there I am, I'm still standing firm. You know, why you gotta pull out a gun for? What you gonna do with that? You gonna shoot me with that? You think that's worth it? Over what? You know, so I'm still in his face, firm, but at the same time, I'm not saying stuff like, yo, you're a bitch, bro. You know, so I'm not talking to tribes because I can get shot.
Is there any way to kind of build middle ground? Like, hey, we all come from the same spot.
Yeah, I mean, people, like sometimes people use that. Mm-hmm. So in my case worked out, I knew the kid's brother. The kid's brother was doing like 10 years in jail. And I knew the kid's brother because I used to run with his brother too. And then someone said my name, which is my gang name, which I'm not going to say. Someone said, oh, that's so-and-so, your brother's friend. And then that's how this thing stopped.
Because right? Probably he doesn't want to shoot anyway. So this gives him right. An excuse.
Excuse to not shoot, but yeah. At the same time, not look weak in front of his friend.
Yeah.
Right. But I remember the week after that, when I did have something, I remember I was at high school. I was in school, and me and my friend were standing outside. And we saw the kid. We saw him. And I was like, hey, my friend said, that's the kid from last week. And I said, no, it's not. He's like, it is. And even me, I didn't want to restart this problem. It was done. But I had to because my friend was there and I couldn't look weak. So we followed the kid to a store. He went into a store and I went to a store and I said, yo, I want to talk to you. And he remembered me. He wouldn't come out the store. He would not come out the store because, you know, you put a gun to someone's face and now someone's followed you somewhere randomly and just run up on you and say, I want to talk to you. You're not going to come out the store because, you know. And then I told him, I said, listen, nothing's going to happen to you, bro. I just want to talk to you. Just come out the store. And he didn't want to come out the store. And I was like, bro, just come out the store. Nothing's going to happen to you. And he came out the store. And I told him, I says, you remember last week you put a gun in my face? I was like, never put a gun in someone's face and don't use it. I said, right now I could kill you right here. Right here. I could kill you here. And I said, like, for what? For what? For staring at people? I was like, it's real stupid. And I told him, I said, so what do you want to do? You want to keep this beef or you want to squash it? And then he chose to squash it. And that was the end of it. But
that's good.
But that's how things happen. You know, like I could have shot him there. And my crazy friend, this kid, he's really, really crazy. He wanted to shoot him.
Well, whatever happened to that kid, you know?
So I didn't talk to him for a long time, but recently he's been like trying to contact me a little bit. So I do talk to him a little bit, but I just try not to make, I just talk to him as a distant friend because I just don't want to.
Yeah. You know,
it says as a distant friend, like, you know, so I do a lot of ghosting. I'll talk to him and then not talk to him for a while. And then maybe talk to him a little bit and not talk to him for a while. But yeah, he's still around, but yeah. He wanted to shoot the guy, and I was like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. Before we get into what happened when you got caught with all these guns in school, like, obviously you've been through a lot of these types of experiences, and we've talked about this before, just hanging out, but obviously you build up some kind of, just like everybody does based on their background, you build skills and different types of intelligence and instincts based on your background and what your experiences are. And these are kind of like scary life and death experiences not only you had because of your stepdad, but because of your friends and these gangs and where you were living. Like, what can you see are the differences in your instincts between you and, let's say, other people like me or like other people you see that you know? Oh, you know people from all walks of life.
Yeah, it's really, really different. Like for me, anybody who's around me will tell you, I know what's going on around me all the time. I know the conversation that's maybe 100 feet from me. I always know what's going on. I can read an area well. I can read a room well. You know, you always hear about people a lot of times being in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's because a lot of people don't read what's going on.
But I sort of feel like everybody thinks they're good. I always hear from everybody, oh, I'm really good judge of people. Now, I admit, actually, I am not such a great judge of people. I tend to be a little too trusting, and I don't know why that is. But why do you think you're really good at it? And I've seen examples where you're great at it. Like, what do you think it is? You know, and also, how do you see specific differences between yourself and other people? Like, have there been situations where the other people were very wrong and it was obvious you were right?
Well, because I don't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. It takes me a while to, I don't trust anybody. I pretend like I trust people until I really trust them, but I don't trust anybody. I always take everything for what it is. And for me to trust them, like, I have to really feel the energy and vibe with them. But I judge people really well. Like, I there's little certain things that people do that gives me, so like the spidey sense, I get it.
Like what?
Like for example, like the thing we spoke about yesterday, like let's say you have someone that you're with, maybe it's a friend, it can even be a guy, a friend, and we're together in a group and you come and introduce your friend and, you know, we're all together talking, but your friend is kind of like standoffish or by himself or not really paying attention to
not paying attention
to what's going on with the room or with the conversation, then I got a problem with that. Because that's just strange. That's like, you know, a lot of times people do that when they're trying to hide something or when there's something that they're thinking about that doesn't match with what we're about. So you'll see people do that if they don't like your friends. So say you have some friends and they don't like your friends, you'll see a lot of times that person will be kind of like standoffish and not really engage in the conversation or even listen to the conversation, right? They'll probably be doing something, maybe say they're on their phone the whole time, right? And we're in a group, right? So because they're not interested or they don't have nothing to do with it or they have something to hide that they don't want you to pick up. Like, I've been in situations like that where people are hiding something, you know, when you pick up, like, I'll give you an example. So the app Clubhouse, right? People go in there and they talk the craziestness of crazy things that they did. Oh yeah, I'm the CEO of this, or I did this, or I did that, or, you know, I'm this and that and this, right? So when I'm on the app, I tell them, I says, listen, I co-own a club called Spin in New York. You live in New York? Yeah, I live in New York. Why don't you come by and come have a drink? Very easy, right? You live in New York City. See, it's not that hard to come by the club, and they won't do it. They won't do it. Only the real ones do it.
Why do you think they won't do it?
Because they know that if they come and I meet them face to face, right, I'm going to tell that, oh, this guy's full of shit. And if I know they're full of shit, then that means they're thinking, well, if he finds out I'm full of shit, then I'm on Clubhouse. I can say, hey, this guy's full of shit. I know because I met him. So they won't come. And if they never come, I can think whatever I want to think, but I have no proof.
Right.
So they won't come. They won't come meet me. It's crazy. I have a dude who like lives in my neighborhood, and he talks all these big things, all this big talk. I invited that dude a million times. Never came. He lives in my neighborhood. And the guy just talks so much nonsense. And he's never came to meet me. I said, hey, you should come to my club. You got free drinks, free food. Just come hang out. Who doesn't want free drinks, free food? Right. Come. Dude never came, man. And it's me trying to call them up.
And again, I feel like a lot of people automatically, I mean, it's like one of those things where 9 out of 10 people think they're above average at judging people. Yeah. But I've seen you, like the situation we were talking about last night, where I was kind of drastically wrong about someone.
Right.
And you, it turned out in a very surprising way, were surprisingly right. And it was a shocking thing.
Yeah.
And to the level of like national security, kind of shocking.
It's crazy.
And But there's another thing I've seen you do, though. Like one time we were going to another country and I saw you stopped at the airport. Everybody else is just getting through.
Yeah.
Like, and you were stopped and they specifically called you out and they asked you, you know, what is the nature of your business here? And they weren't asking anyone else. They saw like a dozen people in a row go through and then they call you out for what could be said as an obvious reason that they did that. But you were kind of hard back. Like
yeah.
The way I am, if I'm in a situation like that, is I'm just going to immediately comply, you know, yes, sir. Like, hey, I'm here for this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. But you were hard back. You were like, why are you asking me? You raise your voice. Why are you asking me? And I would have been afraid to do that because then I thought it might have escalated the trouble.
Right.
But it feels like you know where to push the edge. And maybe, again, I'm being simplistic. Like, maybe you were stupid at doing that. But I kind of had a feeling you knew what you were doing.
Right.
Like, you know where to push the edge.
Right. It's very similar to what I mentioned before about with the kid with the gun in my face. Like, it's about not really backing down, standing your ground, but not escalating it at the same time. So it's not being soft, but at the same time, not escalating that situation. So I'd be the kid with the gun in my face. I wasn't going to back down from him, right? But I also wasn't going to escalate it in a way that I would get shot. So the same thing with the lady from the immigration thing, whatever you want to call it, right? I wasn't going to back down. I wasn't going to be like, you know, no, why are you asking me? You know, because I know how far I can take something.
What if she said, are you causing trouble for me right now?
And I would have been like, well, yes, if you're causing trouble for me. That's been my exact answer. Yes, if you're causing trouble for me. Because I know at the end of the day, I didn't do anything wrong.
And I see.
The worst that can happen is what? You're going to have me question? Let's go. Let's do it. I don't mind. We can question all day long.
And also, you probably have a sense like of, okay, this is this type of country. Like if you were going into North Korea and the same thing happened.
Different story.
Right.
Now we got
and we'll get story. To that later because you've been to North Korea. But
now it's a different story because, North Korea said that you'll be arrested and no one would even know.
Yeah.
So in that case, it'd be a different story because I you have to know how far you can take something and you know, figure out, well, is it worth it? Is you being right worth being arrested for 15 years? And no, it's not. But right. I know here, there's nothing going to happen to me.
Right.
Right. Because I didn't do anything. And if something did happen, it'd be a problem. In North Korea is a different story. If something happened to you, no one would even know for a long time. And then it would be so hard for anyone to help you.
Yeah.
So those things I know.
And then what about in competition? And we'll get more into this later because we're still only at age 13 in your story where you're about to go to Africa and become the greatest ping pong player in history. But in competition, how do you think these instincts come into play? Because obviously there are people from different backgrounds who are great at competition and world champion level players like yourself. But like, how does this help you, these kind of instincts help you in competition?
Well, it helps a lot in terms of not letting your opponent know how you feel. I think a lot of times in competition, you see a lot of athletes, you know, body language is really important in competition. It's so important. Like, for example, let's say I'm playing someone and I made a great point and the guy goes, you know, and you see his face get down. That gives me more fuel because now I know I got this guy. So like the really good athletes, if you look at their body language, it's hard to tell if this guy's happy, if this guy's sad. Is he angry he lost that point? Some athletes show it more than others. Like some athletes might get really upset if they lose a point, but that just gives feel to another athlete. Like when you get upset and you're playing, like someone gets upset when they're playing me, I get more confident.
And what does that do for you? Like how do you change your play in order to take advantage of that lack of confidence?
Now I go on the attack. Mm-hmm. Because if you're angry and you're thinking about what happened in the last point, then it's hard for you to play the next point. So now, like in my sport in ping pong, now I say, oh, this guy's getting pissed off. Now I go on the attack. And now I'm going to attack you now. And now it's going to be harder for you because now you're still dwelling on the last point and you're still angry, right? So you won't be able to concentrate as much. Or I might give you maybe some really tricky serve now, right? Mm-hmm. Or I might even look at you. Mm-hmm. I might even look at you and smile. Mm-hmm. People do this. Ping pong is also very mentally strategic. Like there's a lot of things that we do. Like for example, before I serve the ball, I might look at you, Like, there was a guy who used to play for USA. He came from China. And this guy would give you 4 seconds of death stare. He did it to every single person. And he would just, before he served, he would hold the ball. He would look at you, just look into your eyes. And just, and it was the weirdest thing ever, because you're like, bro, why is this guy looking at me like this? And that's what he did. But that was a mental thing.
Did it work for him?
Yes. He's one of the best players.
I sort of feel like, let's say, and maybe this is a different thing, but let's say I'm in a tournament playing chess and I just stare at the person on the other side. I sort of think he might be thinking, this guy's a jerk, just about me.
Right. But that's where it starts, mm-hmm. right? The first part is, instead of him thinking about what the next move is, he's thinking about, why is this guy staring at me? So really, you took him a bit off his game, because the only thing he should be thinking about is that next move. He shouldn't be caring what you're looking at. But the fact that that would be in his head, why is this guy staring at me? He's a jerk. You've already took him just a bit off what he's supposed to be doing, which is focusing on the next move.
Yeah.
So they do it in ping pong a lot. Like, people use all kinds of stuff. Like the other day, I was watching the matches, and one of the Britain kids was playing against the USA junior I was coaching, and the USA junior was winning. He was doing really well. And the Britain kid made a point, and he went, yo, and he put his hand in his fist, and he looked at the kid I was coaching. Luckily, that doesn't bother that kid, which is amazing, because normally kids get rattled by that. But I could see in his face, like, his face just stood, it just stood straight. Like, it didn't show an emotion back towards what that kid from Great Britain was giving him.
Yeah.
And that made the Great Britain kid, like, a little bit uneasy, because he played the next point and completely whiffed the ball. And then.
See, that's the thing. It could backfire.
It backfire. Yeah.
Do that, and the other person like makes yes. face back at you, or yes, or does
yes.
nothing.
Yes. And then he went for the next shot and missed. And then the junior American was coaching said, "Joe!" in his face. And it was so funny, because, you know, he thought. But some kids, some people work on, like sometimes the whole point of doing that is to get you angry, right? When you're playing a sport and you're fist pumping in someone's face and you're looking at them. And yeah, I made this point, I'm good. It's actually saying, I made this point, you suck, you can't beat me. That's the language. So the person gets upset, right? Now you took them out of their game, and now they're focused on trying to beat you because you made this stupid remark, you try to make them look stupid instead of trying to beat you because they need to beat you at this sport.
Right, so you have to really, if you're gonna do that, that's a risk. If you're going to go like, yeah, that's a risk, because it's so easy to backfire if someone's even modestly professional.
Yes, because if let's say you make a point, you go, yeah, and you're really loud, and the guy just rips the ball past you to the next point, that kind of makes you look stupid.
Yeah.
Right? And now you have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how you're going to do it. But yeah, it makes you look stupid.
So, but I feel like with your, like, you have a very kind of larger-than-life, you know, kind of style or character. And if you do it, it's going to throw people off.
Well, if I do it, I played, I remember in 2002, it was, or 2001, 2002, I think. I played my first pro tour. I played German Open, and I got destroyed by everybody. Right after that, I played Dutch Open. I lost to England, got destroyed. I lost to Russia, got destroyed. Then I had to play China. Right? China's the best in the world by far. So, of course, I was going to get destroyed. First game got destroyed 11-1. Second game got destroyed 11-2. Third game, I think it was like, I don't remember. No, I think it was 2-0, right? Or was it 3-0 first? It was, I think it was 2-0 or 3. I don't remember. 2 or 3-0. And then my friend who's from Germany called timeout, and he said, come on, Wally, come on. You have to fight. And my friend's really funny, because he's very fascinated about the whole gangster thing. Come on, Wally, you're a gangster. Boop, boop, boop. Like this. He's very funny. So, you know, I went back to the table and I made a really fast serve that was an ace. And when I made the ace, I was like, yeah, that's it, baby. Come on. Come on. And I just flipped out. And the kid that I was playing, he was like, just what the? He just, and then I did it again, and he missed the second one, and I was up 2-0. It's Chinese. And the kid just started getting nervous, because he's never seen, actually no one's never seen someone like me going crazy like that. Like it was a fight. And I was very loud. And I was in his head. And I won a game. So I took a game off of Chinese. Then I won the next game, right? So, I think it was 2-0. It was 2-0. Then I won one game. Then it was 2-1. He won the next game very close. Then I won it, right? 2-1. Then I won the next game. So it's 3-2. And this is an American who just started playing pro against a Chinese. And he was so nervous and so out of his game because of what I was doing. And then I was 9-6. I was 9-6 up in the sixth game. And everyone was watching because it's crazy that this American guy from New York City is trying to beat Chinese player. And it was 9-6 up. And then I did the wrong thing. I said to myself, let me calm down. Because the Chinese coach called timeout. And Chinese coach was very upset. And my German friend speaks fluent Chinese. And he was translating. And the Chinese coach said to the kid, he says, if you lose to this guy, I've never saw this guy anywhere in the world. If you lose to him, you would never play in this country ever again.
Oh, my gosh.
Kenzo was furious. And for me, you know, I always say, you know, now I say it. It's one of my lessons. If it's not broke, don't fix it. And I fixed something that was not broken. I was beating him mentally. And my skill, of course, wasn't the same level. He was definitely way better than me. But in the mental department, he was by far below me. After the timeout, I figured, I can win this, which was the wrong thing to do. Let me calm down and focus. And I lost the match, 11-9.
Oh, my gosh. So you didn't get a single point after that?
No. I lost the match, 11-9.
And now, so that's sports and that's ping pong. You've also been in like business situations and sales situations. When do you think these instincts, you know, come into play there?
I just think like in the terms of like, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like that was a valuable lesson I learned. Like if something is working, continue to do it. Why change it? Why out of nowhere you decide to change it, right? Because, okay, can make it better? It's possible, right? But it's also possible that it could make it a lot worse, right? So now in life, you know, I always say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like I see my students do it all the time. They do it all the time in a match. They'll be playing, they'll be doing something that works, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they try something new and then wind up losing the match because of it.
I could see this happening like in a negotiating sense. Like let's say in a business setting, you know, I've been in situations where someone wants to negotiate with me, like let's say buy a service or buy a company or whatever. And at first I'm all confident because they want something I have. But then as it gets close and I see the potential rewards, I get nervous. And I start being more compliant to that.
Yes, yeah.
And then everything switches and it could be over after that.
Right.
So that's important to kind of like stick to what worked is good advice. So, okay, 13 years old, how did they catch you with a gun?
Yeah, so that's your 14. So I was in school and I had it in my locker. And I think someone maybe told. I don't know. I'm sure someone told because I didn't have it on me when I got caught. It was in the locker. And they came to the class and they said, they found something in your locker because they couldn't, you know, I guess they didn't want to alarm the class. And then the principal took me out of the classroom and then we went and I already knew what it was. Like once they said that, I knew.
Could you have said, that must have been put in my locker I was not there?
I mean, I could have said that, but.
I feel like that's like what a lawyer would say.
Yeah, that wasn't going to work. Because prints all over it.
Yeah.
And, police were there and got arrested. And they you know, went through this stupid process. And the end result was, because I had prior problems already, I had a lot of problems as a kid with weapons, whether it's knives or guns or even smallest, or wasn't really small. Those could have been like felonies, like a lot of gang fighting,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. They were thinking about giving me 10 years. 10 years is crazy.
Wait, 14 though, are they allowed to do that?
Yeah, they can give you from juvenile to adult. Mm-hmm. It's not like because you're juvenile, you're like 17. They say, okay, yeah, he's got a gun. We just can only give him 1 year. No, it's whatever the law says for the crime. And so I always had good grades. So my other outlet, so the first outlet was the gang, the second outlet was sports. So I played every sport in school because I didn't want to, I didn't want to be home.
Yeah.
Right. I hated being home, you know, with all the abuse. So the other thing was sports. So I played every sport in school. Everything I could play, I played because, you know, you got practice in the morning, practice at night, in the evening. By the time you get home, you're tired and numb to all the nonsense going on. So I just played sports, every sport. And I was good at every single sport. But the other problem was, is that in order to stay on a team, you have to have good grades. If you have bad grades, then you couldn't be on a team. So I made sure I had good grades by having people do the work for me. Like if I needed an essay written, I had someone to do it. Like everything, I had someone to do. If I didn't have notes.
How would you get someone to write your essay?
Oh, I would tell them, hey, you know, I need to write this. People were scared of me in school. And they weren't scared of me. They were scared of the gang I was in. So people would do it. And it was sort of like, you know, yeah, if you help me, I help you. If someone bothers you, you know, I got your back. So I had people doing a lot of my school, especially mathematics, all of it. Actually, all of it. Even through college. Even when I got into college, I think I cheated the whole way. I'm almost positive. Huh. I don't like math. I hate math. And so all through anything that I didn't like, I had people do it. And that's how I kept my grades. So I had good grades in school. And so my mom used that as a way for me to not go to jail, but go to fucking boarding school.
So was she talking to a judge? Was she talking to
a judge, lawyer, judge and lawyer. Mm-hmm. And they said that I have good grades. And if I was to do, you know, lengthy time as a kid, then my life would be ruined, which would be. And that's,
yeah.
And that happens to a lot of kids. A lot of kids go do some dumb shit. They get 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And after that, you're pretty much almost useless. I mean, you can't do anything. I mean, because those are the most important times of your,
yeah.
of your life. And so my mom used this to get a deal where I would go to boarding school in Africa. So I was supposed to go to boarding. So I went to boarding school.
Did the judge agree to you could go to any boarding school, or like it had to be out of the country, or
I don't
be
know.
In Africa?
Oh, I don't know how they came to that thing, but it was in Africa.
Where in Africa?
In Nigeria. So
okay.
It was 2 years.
How'd she find the school? Like what?
Oh, so she has family, friends that we do, and then my dad, family is originally from there as well. So she knew about it and stuff. And everyone always told her, oh man, you know, you need to send them to Africa. Everyone always says this. You need to send them there. They'll discipline them. You know, they'll beat the good into him. That's the exact words. Like they'll beat the good into him. So it all worked out some miraculous way. And I wound up going to Africa to boarding school.
Were you excited about it?
No, I hated it. I hated every minute of it. I didn't want to go.
But like before, before you went, you were like,
"Yeah, I'm not going there." I was like, "I don't want to go there."
But would you have? I mean, you knew the choice was that or jail.
In my mind, jail seemed better.
Wow.
Because in my mind, I was like, "Okay, you know, it's jail. I've been arrested a lot of times. Mm-hmm. You know, I never did time. I've been arrested a lot of times. You know, but that seemed better than going to another country where I knew no one, that didn't know the language, I don't know anybody." And so I went there for 2 years. It was 2 years there. The first year
did you come back at all during the 2 years?
So the first year I went, I was supposed to come visit. And I told him, I said, with my big mouth, I always had a big mouth, I can't wait to go back. I'm never coming back here. And they said, oh, yeah? They tore my ticket up.
Wow.
So I didn't get to come visit.
So wait, so you land in Nigeria.
Yeah.
I guess the school picked you up somehow.
Yeah.
And you get to the dormitory. It's a boarding school, so there's other kids who are living there. Yeah. Probably most of them are from Nigeria, from
all
other parts of Nigeria.
From Africa.
So like all from all over, but they're living there. And they all knew each other, and you're the new kid from America. Yeah. What was like their first response to you?
It was mixed. It was weird because they're all African and I'm American. So there's sort of like a racism kind of thing, you know, where I was, they used to say this word, I can't remember what the language was, but it meant the kid who eats butter. And so they would say, I eat butter because I'm soft. Or I wasn't the real black. That was another one. So, you know, I left America from fighting to go there to fight more. But at least the fighting there was safer. Like, it wasn't like someone was going to stab you or you were going to get jumped. Like, you never got jumped. No one ever jumped you. It was, if you would fight someone, everyone was going to come out to watch and it was a fair fight. It was never two people, three, never. That never kind of thing.
And this is what I don't understand. When you say fight, like, do people like, okay, you're facing your opponent. Maybe it was like the bully in school or someone would pick on you and he's like, outside. And now you're facing him. Does he start off like, does he punch you in the face? Like what? Well, what's the fight like?
Oh, no. So as soon, if you're going to fight, you know, people are going to come out and they're going to watch and you just start. Well, someone's going to throw a first punch. Someone maybe not going to throw a first punch. Maybe there's talking in the beginning a little bit. But a lot of times it's almost like looks like a cage fighting.
But like, is there a skill level? Like, do they know some things that you don't know? Because you were used to fighting with a gang behind you and maybe a knife or a weapon.
No, you're just throwing. You're just throwing down, wrestling, grabbing. No, I wrestled.
So did the wrestling must have helped.
Yeah, of course. Because, you know, I know how to take people down. But it didn't get to wrestling. There's a lot of punches, you know. And it's just fighting. And then after the fight, that was it. It wasn't like, yeah, I'm going to kill you tomorrow. No, it was it. If you got beat up, so you take your ass whipping, you shake hands. And then you became friends. Actually, the dude, I gave him a big knot on his forehead. We became good, like, best friends. So that's how it works usually, you know. You fight it out, you get the anger out, and then that's it. That's never talked about again.
So after like a few months in this school, were you friends because you had been fighting with?
Yeah, I had a lot of friends like who liked me because I was American and from New York. Then I had a lot of people who didn't like me because I wasn't the real black.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I came from a gang background and I was always fighting. So if someone like I remember the prefect. So like in the school, if someone's in a higher grade than you, they can tell you what to do. It's the craziest thing. Like they would say, hey boy, come clean my classroom. And I'd be like, you're out of your mind. I'm not cleaning your classroom. I would get hit.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, you can't really, so the reason this system works is that you can't win in this system. It's impossible. Let's say a teacher says, hey, put a math problem on the board. And you put the wrong problem on the board, you're going to get hit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now you can say, no, you're not going to hit me. Then the teacher's going to say, I'm not going to hit you. Okay. Eric, John, hold him. And Eric, John is like your best friends. You know what they're going to do? They're going to hold you because they don't want to get hit. So they're going to hold you so that you can get hit. And that's how it works. So eventually you can't fight anymore. Okay, you can fight the people who are trying to bully you outside of school. But in school is no chance because there's no way you can win. It's no way because everybody will just... They'll just tell everybody to hold you, and that's it, and you're going to get hit. So I used to get lines in my legs. I used to get hit all the time. And then there were some teachers who felt bad for me, like my English teacher, my French teacher, and they weren't so hard on me. My math teacher hated me. The math teacher was really scary, man. He was this big African dude, light in complexion, and he had like this crazy bald head with like this crazy scar. As if someone poured like oil on his head. That's what it looked like. It burned all over his head. And this dude came in with like a stick. So each teacher comes in with a different kind of stick, depending on what they like. Some come in with the really thin ones that when he hits you, it hurts, but that one's gonna leave the marks because it's very thin. Someone come in with like thick sticks. Like this teacher came with a big, thick one like this. You get hit with that, you know you got hit. And I hated this dude, man. He hated me. And he would always pick on me to go put the answer to the math question because he knew that I wouldn't knew it so I could get hit. Because a lot of times, it was all about breaking the American. You know, we got to break this horse. He's like,
were you the only American in the school?
Yeah, in the school, yeah. And we have to break him. Because the part I didn't tell you about, the first time I got to the school, the first day, whose family was talking to some of the staff members. I think they were signing me up. And I was just in the compound, just kind of like hanging out, a guy walks up to me, hits me in the head with a stick, and says something in the language. And I was like, what the hell? And I started like swinging on him and like trying to kick him. The people ran out and was like, what's going on? I said, just fucking try to hit me in the head with a stick. So it was the principal of the school.
Oh my gosh.
So that made life in school for me even worse, because the principal of the school is like God, and you don't even look at him in the eyes. You look down, you know, and yeah, and here I am trying to beat up the principal. So everybody was like, who's this guy? He's like, oh, this American guy. Oh, American? Okay. So they considered me like a wild horse, and they were going to break this wild horse. And that's why school was rough, man. Like everybody who had power, like, let me know that this is our country and this is how we do it. You're not going to have a choice.
And that was year one. Year two, did you start to get better or?
No. It was, I mean, I had more friends by year two, but it didn't get better. I got better. So I started to be more respectful, kind of comply.
So they did break you.
Yeah, they did. There was no way to not get broken.
Right.
It's impossible. Unless you get hit. Now, unless you like limitless amounts of pain, then yeah, but I didn't like to be hit.
So but by the time you came back, like, did you go to school when you came back? Or did you finish high school in Nigeria?
No, I came back.
And like, did your old friends, were they like, Wally, what the hell happened to you?
They were laughing at me because I had an accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, throw me the ball. And they would laugh at me. Yeah, I had this crazy accent, but I was much stronger. Right. I'd been fighting. And also, when I was there, I joined a couple of things. I joined Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts in Africa are very different than the Boy Scouts in America. Then I joined a thing called Man of War. And Man of War is this crazy, it's like Boy Scouts times 100. Right. You even wear like this military outfit with a beret. It was crazy. And they make you do dumb things like, they would call it falling like a leg of a tree. Right, so you would have to stand straight up. You would have to hold your hands in so that your forearms are showing, and you would just fall straight. You stand straight up and just fall straight down to the ground onto your forearm.
Did anyone break their arms doing that?
I just didn't want to break it, but it, in the beginning, it was scary. And if you didn't do it, you got hit.
Yeah.
So
how would you do it though? Like, I can't even imagine doing
that. Stand straight up and you fall.
I almost don't think I can let myself fall. Like, yeah. I would turn to the side a little bit.
Oh, you'll let yourself fall. Like, once you get hit, once you don't... Because the thing was, everything, there was no choices.
I mean, you could hurt your head.
Yeah, I mean, let's say your forearm or your top body is weak and you hit your face into the floor. But if you didn't do it, you were going to get whipped. So there was no... You just had to do it. And so I remember my forearms were all swollen. You know, but after a while, you get used to it, so... When I came back, I was much stronger, and I thought I was ready to protect my mom. So that was one of the things that, you know, I came back much stronger. I wasn't afraid of my stepfather anymore at all, like zero.
And how did he react to you when you came back?
He didn't care. He never cared. It wasn't even like he was happy to see me at all anyway. So my mom was very happy. But, you know, for him, because now he had another son. He had a son from my mom, my stepbrother. And that was like the golden child,
right?
And he definitely didn't care. But that's where the craziness came after.
Oh, so what happened then?
So there was a day I was at home and my stepfather was grabbing my mother by the throat. I don't know, they had some argument earlier and it went over. Like, when they would argue, it would start like in the morning, go into the evening. It was just crazy. They were in the kitchen and then he just grabbed her by the throat. He's going to hit her. And I looked back and I didn't say anything. I just looked. I didn't even get up. I didn't say anything. I just looked. And then when I looked, he told me, he goes, oh, if you look over here again, you're going to get the same exact thing. And then I just lost it. Like, all the years of abuse, just lost it. I ran out the house. At this time, there were no guns in my house. They were all at my friend's house. So I ran out the house, went back. I don't even remember running out of the house. I don't even remember coming back with a gun. The only part I remember is when I put the gun to his face. And then I ran out the house. I came, got a gun from the friend's house, came back, put the gun to his face, and I was going to shoot him. And I remember I was shaking, I was crying, and my mom called the police. You know, she was like, stop. She called the police, and she said, oh, you guys need to hurry. if you don't, if my son's trying to kill my husband. That's what she said. She didn't say my husband was beating the shit out of me, choking me. She said, my son's trying to kill my husband. And I just fucking lost it. Like, I started crying. I started having this like crazy feeling of like betrayal. Because, you know, all your life as a kid, you want to protect your mom. Right? Every kid wants to protect his mom. And when you see your mom getting beat up, punched in the face, choked, kicked, you know, you want to protect your mom, but you can't. Now I finally could. And then my mom just turned. So it was almost like all the insides of me was ripped out. And I was just a shell. I almost shot my mom and my stepfather. Like, it was so close. It was really, really, really close. Because I was just crying and I was shaking. And I knew the police were coming. I call it the background mind. So like when you're in a situation, I still have something. So some people get in a situation, they have nothing. And so only thing they can think about is the scenario that they're in. I get in a situation, there's always another part of me that's thinking about something else. So as I'm like, you know, crying and shaking and I want to shoot my mom and him, I want to end both of them. Something says, if you do this, you do this right now, everything your stepfather said about you is going to happen today. Mm. Everything, right? And the same
part. And what was it? Well, your stepfather, the guns in his base, your mom's.
Oh, man, he was trying to go through we had this door, and it's talking about a window with glass. He was trying to go through the glass. He couldn't go anywhere because I was right in front of him. There was no way to run.
Was he saying anything to you?
He was like, don't do this. He was scared to death. Because I never confronted him ever. Like, I was scared to even show him that I was angry. Because what would happen was, is they would argue, they would fight. After I would hug my mom, she'd be bleeding. And then they would go and have sex, and I'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
I didn't cause this. Why am I in trouble? I'd be punished. Seriously. I'd be punished. And that was a way for him to keep control over me. So I would be punished all the time for nothing. They would have to fight. I would hug my mom because that's what you're supposed to do when your mom's crying and bloody. You hug her. And then I would get punished after they made up. So my mom would turn against me. He would turn against me. And I was the bad one. But I didn't cause this nonsense, right? But that was a way to keep control over me so that I wouldn't try to help my mom. Like, all this stuff I figured out, like, years later of why he was doing that. Like, we never had, none of my family came to my house. None of them. My grandmother, never. My uncle, never. They never came in my house, ever. Ever. How's that possible? My mom has 5 brothers. 5. They've never stepped foot in my house.
None of them ever said to your stepdad, hey, don't touch her.
They would come. This is what would happen. My mom would call them. They would come, but then my mom wouldn't let them in. So they got fed up. Every time they come, my mom would not let them in. And so they've never been in my house. And then I didn't realize this until like actually very, very recently because of Clubhouse, because of the app, because I started learning about what narcissism is and how what a narcissist does. One of the things that they do is they keep you away from your family. So my stepfather was keeping my mom's family away from her, right? So that he could do whatever he wanted to. That's why my uncles never came. If I went to see my uncles, I would go to their house, but they never came to my house ever.
So in this situation, the police were on their way.
So the other side.
Dad's crying.
Yeah, so the other side of me was like, you need to get out of this house, right? So I just said, you know what? You two deserve each other, and I hope you die together. And I just left. Never went back again.
You never went back to that house again?
Nope. Gone. Left.
Where'd you go?
And hang out with my friends. Uh-huh. Stay at a friend's house. You know, for a couple of times, you know, I lived in the street. Like, we just broke night every day, meaning like we just fucking hung out like crackheads. And we're just up every night doing dumb stuff.
Like,
and
where then, would you sleep though?
Up maybe like on a train or either friend, if we had a friend's house, you know, if you had a basement or something like this, you know, that's what I do. And I did that for like almost a year, just like hanging out in the street.
Did your mom ever reach out and say, hey, Wally, come on back?
She couldn't find me. Mm-hmm. I was no way.
What in school she could find you?
I stopped going for like a year, and then I got stopped by police one time though. But they couldn't prove shit. If my mom said I had a gun, I said I don't know what you're talking about. I said it was a plastic gun. It wasn't even real. And the guy was like, where is it? I said, oh, I threw it away. But the kid, they had nothing on me. And,
yeah.
So I just stopped talking to them, stopped talking to her, and that was it. And then it started.
So you never heard, though, she wanted to reach out to you and patch things up?
No.
Have you talked?
I didn't talk to my mom for years, like many years. Actually, I didn't talk to her for years. And then, like, you know, after I did all my table tennis stuff and became a little bit successful, I tried to talk to her, but I couldn't because she wouldn't acknowledge. No, all you gotta do is just say sorry. I'm the most easy person in the world. We could have the craziest fight, angry. And if you say, yo, my bad, I'm good. It's like almost it didn't exist. That's my character. She wouldn't even like acknowledge. And then every time I spoke to her, it just made me really intensely angry because I'm thinking, my thought pattern is that imagine if the cops would have came. Imagine if I didn't get out of there.
Yeah.
I already got a break that I went to Africa and I came back and I'm doing some dumb shit again. I've probably been in jail for like 20 years or whatever. So you were willing to put your son in jail for a guy who's been beating you all your life, all the time that we've been with this dude. You're willing to put your son in jail over him? So every time I think about that, it makes me really so angry. And when I talked to her, when I was talking on the phone, and she wouldn't apologize for that, it made me really, really, and it started to just give me dark thoughts. And then I was like, I can't do this. So I stopped talking.
Or she could have even just been honest with you and say, look, I didn't want you to kill him because you still would have gone to jail. Would have even
right, right. At least say something. But to not like acknowledge anything and not, it used to make me really, really.
Did she stay with him?
Yes. Yes. It's madness. Like she stayed with him till he passed. And the only reason I knew he passed was because like I just cut all my family off. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I cut everyone off. And people find you through Facebook or whatever. And social media. And one of my uncles contacted me and I started talking to him a little bit. And he found out that my stepfather died.
Mm.
It was like maybe I wanna say 6 years ago about.
That's like kind of right before I met you.
Yeah, maybe right before me. Yeah. So he found out that I don't know how he found out, but he knew that he died. And he was very happy for it. He made it known. Because that was my mom's youngest brother. And that was the one that she would always call. And he would always come with a bat.
What about your younger stepbrother, like the golden child?
He died very recently, too.
Oh, really?
He died, I think it was either during the pandemic or right before the pandemic.
How did he die?
A heart attack.
Really? A heart attack?
Yeah, but my stepbrother lived a crazy life up until he died. Like, I changed. I found a sport, changed my life. My stepbrother, on the other hand, He.
Like, what was the craziest thing about his life?
Oh man, he was like a pimp, like a real pimp. Like,
how old is he?
Oh man, my stepbrother's got to be. He's got to be like maybe late 30s, and he was a pimp, like a real pimp, like a real pimp, and he was definitely living that real gangster life. Because when I was doing my thing, he was also part of the gang as well.
Yeah.
But he was younger. Yeah, but he never changed. And so, I don't know. And then also, I don't know why he died, because when he passed, how did I find out? I'm trying to remember how I found out he passed. That's how my other friend contacted. My other friend contacted me on Instagram and was like, yo, Victor passed. Maybe you should call his wife. And I don't know his family. Like, I've never met his wife. So it was one of the most hard things to do. Like, what do you say? Like, I don't know them. I didn't even know what to say. And I just called and said, hey, I'm Victor's brother. Sorry to hear that this happened. And I'm going to have the family call you. And then I had to, like, reach out to all the family that I don't talk to and have them call her, which they freaking never did, because I called her back and she didn't call, so I had to reach out again and say, hey. And then, yeah.
And what was she like? I mean, her husband was a pimp.
I don't know because I don't know her. Like, I never met her. Is maybe the second time I spoke to her in a period of.
But was she nice or?
Yeah, she was nice because I just started talking to her in the last 2 years before he passed. Like once in a while,
yeah.
Like I think I spoke to my brother in 2 years, spoke to him maybe 5 times, and then I would say hello to her, but I don't know her. I never met her, and so just to have to call her and you know offer condolences was really strange. I didn't know what to say. And plus my mom was living there also. And so now it became this thing where my friend was like, hey, maybe you have to go pick up your mom. I was like, that shit's not gonna happen, bro. I was like I went to a conversation with him. Like that's what's not gonna happen.
And why do you think your little brother had a heart attack so young in his 30s?
I think bad health. My little bro's huge. He's huge. Like, he's big guy, huge. And you know, no exercise, you know, oily foods, like just really bad health. Like nobody expected.
By the way, I was thinking about that. This is like another topic, but you don't really eat a lot.
No. Yeah, I don't eat much. I don't eat much.
Like and again, this is off topic a little bit, but I've been thinking about it. Like, what is your daily diet? Like, what do you think about?
Like, I can go the whole day without eating, actually. Mm-hmm. The entire day. Like a lot of times,
and you have a lot of energy.
Yeah, like when we're going to, we're doing the tournament stuff. Like I wake up, I don't eat. I actually don't eat breakfast. Like today, I did, and all I had was like 2 slices of wheat toast and 2 small waffles, and that was it. But I can go the whole day without eating, like the whole day, and then at night I'll eat something.
That's probably healthier.
I don't know, maybe. But I remember when I was in sports, my mom used to always complain, saying, "Oh, you're an athlete. You need to eat." I've been doing this since I was a kid.
Yeah, for competition. Like, let's say you have a big ping pong tournament the next day. Do you think about food?
No, I can't eat before a competition.
Because that day or the day before?
A day before, I will. Like day before, if let's say I have a big competition all day, then I'm going to have my pasta. I'm a big fan of like eating pasta with meat sauce. I'll eat that because I know that'll give me energy. But I won't eat anything that whole day. I maybe have like a granola bar, just something to snack on, but I won't eat food. I won't have breakfast.
Like if you have a 2 p.m. match, for instance, you wake up at 9 a.m., you won't eat between 9 and 2.
No.
Coffee, tea?
Tea. I drink tea every day. Like, I drink tea a lot.
You're probably, already acclimated to it. It probably doesn't do anything for you other than quench your thirst.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you extra energy.
Well, it gives me, black tea is like my wake-up thing. It'll wake me up.
And then before the match, so let's say the match is at noon or 2, we do anything at like 1:30, just gum or
maybe if I have like a granola bar or something.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't like to eat before I play sports
because
it makes me tired.
Yeah, okay. Because you're digesting sluggish. It.
Yeah,
like your body's digesting it.
I feel sluggish, so I never eat. So that's where that came from. I think that's why I do that because I've always played sports all my life. So and I never eat in the morning. So I'll go the whole day and don't eat. And I'm good. I don't feel hungry. And if I'm hungry, I'll have like something, granola bar or something like that.
Not a bag of potato chips or anything?
Oh, no. I actually don't like potato chips so much.
This one's part one. Stay tuned for part two. Great stories all throughout. I hope you enjoy.